Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Welcome back, guys. Today we are talking about a very special statue in the Jardin de Luxembourg, the Masked Merchant. And if you haven't seen this statue, you're going to want to go check him out after this episode. There's a lot to learn about this guy. Everyone knows Luxembourg Gardens are beautiful. People love visiting there. But it's also full of statues. And this statue is covered in several masks of different famous people. And Claudine's going to give us all the information today.
Well, and you know, there's one very famous painter that's in there who I seem to try to work into every episode. We won't spoil that one.
Your favorite.
One of my favorites. Yeah. So the Jardin de Luxembourg, we've talked about that many times. We've done many podcasts that you actually put them on, put it in your ears and start walking around and give yourself a little tour. And this one is pretty, this one, I was obsessed with this monument, the statue. There's over 107 statues in the Luxembourg, many of which, the majority of those were all added in the 19th century by Louis Philippe, but there are a few in there that were still there when it was Marie de Medici in the 16th century, but most of them are more 18th century. And this is really cool. It's up on the side that's closest to the Pantheon. So it's on the eastern side of the park. And I'll put a little, put on my website a little where you can know exactly where it is. And so right now in the winter, it's a great time to go because the leaves are off the trees and you could still see right through it. So you could see from far away exactly where this statue is when in a few months you won't be able to see because of the leaves. But it's great. Don't miss it.
Yeah, go now.
Go now. Yeah, come right now.
Get over there.
Of course, I have a very tough time narrowing down my favorites when it comes to the Louvre and the Orsay. And I just had a client the other day that noticed that I said that 1,000 times. But the Jardin de Luxembourg is no different. It's impossible, but one piece is definitely my favorite. And it's because it includes my other favorite guide. So the Marchand de Masque was done by Zachary Astruc. It's located in the center of the southeast path underneath a canopy of trees. The Marchand de Masque, or the Mask Seller, was created on February 17th, 1883 in plaster. It was shown to the state that commissioned statues left and right for the garden. Astruc's statue of a boy surrounded by the greats of that time was an instant favorite and ordered on the spot. It took almost 3 years, and on February 20th, 1886, the statue of the boy was finally inaugurated. Astruc was an artist and an art critic and very close with a ragtag group of young guys shaking up the art scene in Paris. As an art critic, he defended Manet, Monet, the Impressionists, and but when very few did, and was even immortalized with them in Henri Fantin-Latour's Atelier au Batignon that's hanging in the Orsay. I love to find group paintings and sculptures and deep dive into who they are and everything about them. The Henri Fantin-Latour's paintings in the Orsay, the three he did with the groups of different, you know, Manet and dedicated to Delacroix are really good ones. So buckle up, and we're going to jump right into this one. The young boy is surrounded on the base by eight masks of contemporary figures of the time. They were authors, composers, and artists, many of which aren't as well known today that you most people might not even know. And I've even had a really hard time trying to find information on one or two of them. When the sculpture was first revealed in 1886, there was 12 masks. Today, we only see 9. First things first, in his left hand, holding up over his head, he holds the mask of the king of the romantic authors, Victor Hugo. Victor Hugo died just 1 year before the statue was displayed in the Luxembourg, but was no stranger at that point to statues dedicated to him. As we know, Rodin, who we just talked about a few weeks ago, also did some of him that are in the city. At the base of it, where he's standing holding up the mask high up above his head, and then at his feet around the base of the statue are the masks, 8 masks. At the base, there's standing in the very front when you're looking right up at the young man is the mask of Jules Barbier d'Aubier. He was born on November 2nd, 1808 in Normandy. He was a mystery writer and then at the time ventured into horror and obscure crimes, which I think you would probably love. I'm sure there's probably some ghosts in there. A defender of fellow artists, Balzac and Baudelaire, while he also criticized Emile Zola and Victor Hugo. He died in Paris on April 23rd, 1889. And next to him is Alexandre Dumas Fils. So he was the illegitimate son of Alexandre Dumas, of course. He was born in 1824. The author used his time with the courtesan Marie Duplay as inspiration for the Lady of the Camellias in 1848. In the story, Marguerite would wear a camellia against her chest. It was white when she was available and red when she was taken.
Whoa.
I mean, I would just wear the red one all the time and I'd be like, I'm available.
Me too.
He would spend much of his life working against the feelings he had of his childhood, but made just as big of a name for himself as of a writer, just as his father did. Next to him is the face of composer and writer Hector Berlioz, who was born December 11, 1803. Largely unknown, you could just watch any sporting event that includes France and hum along to a little piece he did. He updated and added the elaborately orchestrated flair to the French national anthem, La Marseillaise, written by Roger de Lille in 1795. It was originally written and outlawed during the Restoration, but returned returned under the Restoration in 1830.
We're glad they put him back.
Did you know that they updated the La Marseillaise? I thought that was a pretty cool little fact.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Next to him is a face that some people might recognize. It is the face of Jean-Baptiste Carpeaux. He was born May 11th, 1827. He studied under Francois Rude and became the darling of Napoleon III as he carved his way through the city. Carpeaux was a sculptor. His famous piece was The Dance, which caused him much notoriety, that was on the front of the right side as you're looking at the Palais Garnier. It was attacked with ink because they thought it was too risque in the nudity, because it shows the young man with a tambourine and everybody around him joyfully, like looking like they're having fun and dancing, and they're naked.
The nudity, we can't handle.
The nudity. And so somebody threw black ink on it. And that original one is in the Orsay. And there's also the model for the Fountain of the Four Parts of the World. That is also the finished piece, is at the very end of the Jardin de Luxembourg. And he did those. And he also did the Pavillon de Flore on the southwest corner of the Louvre. Next is Jean-Baptiste Faure. He was a composer and opera singer. He was born in Moulins on January 15th, 1830. His father served as a cantor at Notre Dame. And as a young man, he worked as the assistant to the organist at Notre Dame and Notre Dame de Chardonnay. What he may be known a bit more for is his immense collection of Impressionist paintings. His first collection included the works of Ingres and Dupré, and then he started getting Delacroix and Corot. In 1878, Faure purchased a painting that shocked all of Paris, Manet's Déjeuner sur l'Herbe. Alongside more than 65 other Manets, he also had 16 Degas, 37 Pissarot, 58 Sicilies, as well as many other, amassing over 800 paintings held in his apartment.
Whoa, that's a lot.
I would have wanted to hang out there. He frequently sold many through the dealer Paul Durand-Rouet. After Manet's death, Faure and Durand-Rouet organized a large exhibit, putting everything that they had of Manet, and started. That's when everybody started to actually want to collect Manet, because Manet was always doing everything he could to shock people. Next to Faure is a man that doesn't need an introduction at all. He's my main man, Eugène Delacroix. If you're keeping count, it's the third time he has appeared in the Jardin de Luxembourg. He was born on the greatest day of the year, April 26th. And if you're keeping track, that's also my birthday. So he was born 1798, the young Delacroix moved to Paris in 1806 and began to study at the Atelier of Guérin. And at 24 years old, he shared his first piece in the Salon. Delacroix believed that artists should contribute large pieces to public spaces, as that is how they would be remembered. Because back then you didn't have, you know, you had the Louvre, but you had to be dead for 10 years. And you didn't have galleries, you know, in every corner of Saint-Germain. So he really believed if you were going to be remembered, you had to do these pieces in public spaces. So there's still pieces that you could see in the Palais Bourbon and the Palais de Luxembourg, which is the Senate and the Assembly Nationale, unfortunately not open to the public. He also painted large pieces in the Hotel de Ville that was burned down in 1871, as well as multiple churches, including Saint-Sulpice, which is nearby. Delacroix moved to the Rue de Furstenberg on December 28, 1857, to be closer to the project in Saint-Sulpice, where he was installing the three paintings dedicated to angels that he was commissioned for in 1849. He finally finished in 1861. In a letter to a friend, he said that that would be the death of him. And on August 13th, 1863, the master died at his home, not far from there. Another one that people might recognize also because of Rodin was the author Honoré de Balzac, who was a master of novels as we know them today. Born on May 20th, 1799, he was immediately sent off to live with a nurse for the first 4 years of his life. The feeling he had of his early child would remain with him his whole life. Balzac looked all over Paris trying to outrun his creditors and writing at a breakneck speed. The La Comédie Humaine paved the way for writers today. He was kind of the first one that wrote a book that became a series. And he kind of really basically mastered the novels that we know today.
So crazy. Oh my gosh, all these connections.
Yeah. And there's the Balzac Museum, which is a really tiny museum in the Passy. And that's where he lived towards the end of his life. It's one of the free museums. If you're out there in that direction, go check it out sometime. Lastly, we have artist Jean-Baptiste Camille Corot. He was born July 16, 1796 in Paris on the Rue de Bac. His parents ran a successful clothing and wig shop and wanted him to follow in their footsteps, but art was on his mind. He traveled throughout Europe, but he was able to devote all his time to the landscapes and architecture of Italy and France, many of which you could see in the Louvre. Corot is known as the father of Impressionism, and you only need to walk into the second floor of the Sully Wing, which is one of my favorites that nobody ever goes to. It's all chronological, and when it gets to the very end, those last few rooms include Corot and Delacroix, and you really see that that's where the Louvre ends at 1848. And so you definitely see how that is the precursor and how much that inspires the Impressionism. Originally, three other masks hung from the seller's hand. There was a mask of Léon Gambetta, who was a politician and president of the French Council, who was opposed to Napoleon III. And he was a lover of one of the first episodes we did and our very first courtesan, Valtesse de Laban. You know how much I loved her. Today, his heart is placed in a very large urn at the center of the crypt of the Pantheon. Another mask was of Charles Gounod, a composer of more than 500 pieces that was born at the Place Saint-André des Arts in 1818. And lastly, it was a mask of Théodore de Bonnevie, who was a poet and good friend of Victor Hugo and Arthur Rimbaud. And that was all. We don't know where those are. I have found a old black and white photo of the statue in the snow with those three hanging from it. But we have no idea. Some joker stole them and, you know, who knows where they are.
That's kind of wild. Like, people stole them. Like, yeah, interesting.
I know. I'm sure it was some kids probably in there, you know, too much wine, thinking, let's just steal that thing and see what happens. But sadly, we don't have it anymore. I wish that maybe they would, I don't know how you would do that unless you know, because it was literally like hanging from a chain. You'd have to do it so that it was tightly attached or something, but it's still pretty cool even without those three.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of faces on there, guys.
It is, and it's really hard because some of them, like Delacroix, Dumas, Balzac, Carpeaux, are all like I mean, most, I know what their faces look like, especially my love Delacroix, but some of the other ones you're like, wait a minute, when I did research on this and tried to figure out the order of it, I'm not even kidding when I say I did it for days, because some of them we don't even know what some of them look like.
Wow. Yeah. It's not easy to do this research, guys. So we have to appreciate Claudine.
I know. And that's why, and send money for wine, because I need it during my research.
You can send her money through Patreon, by the way.
Yeah, because sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, day four of trying to find out who this mask is.
Well, guys, check out ClaudineHemingway.com to learn more. Join her Patreon, take a tour with her, and tune in next week.
Thanks for listening today, guys. If you're interested in learning more about Claudine, her tours, history, and the beautiful photographs that she posts all over Instagram, tune into her website, claudinehemingway.com.